Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week, we're looking at the way labels shape our perspectives on food.
I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but is it acceptable to judge a wine by its label?
There are some labels that I'd say are so bad they're good.
As long as your paperwork's in good shape, you'll get a grass-fed label.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's Meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware and a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
Hello, and welcome to Food Without Borders on Heritage Radio Network. We're a show about food, politics, and identity, and I'm your host tonight, Leah Kurtz. And today we have in the studio with us Mercedes Golip. She is a Venezuelan-born self-taught chef and culinary artist, famous for her My Venezuelan Kitchen pop-up dinners that she's begun hosting at places like the Brooklyn Kitchen. She's also taught cooking classes for the Union Square Green Market, among many other culinary, educational, and kind of experimental projects she's worked on. Mercedes, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, Leah.
So Mercedes and I met actually earlier this year when I wrote a little story about her for Edible Brooklyn and was able to actually go to one of her farm-to-table dinners at the Brooklyn Kitchen, which was absolutely incredible. It was amazing, both aesthetically beautiful and as delicious as her plating was gorgeous. And I got to learn about her background and some of the work she does. So I might reference some of that, I guess, today. But yeah, it was a great introduction to your work. And it's really fascinating kind of your background. I think it's especially kind of interesting how you got into food itself, but I'll let you maybe tell us a little bit about where you're from and maybe one of your first food memories and how you got into cooking.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for having me. The pop-ups have been really, really fun. It's been a way to experiment and also mix what I brought from Venezuela and all the things that have been an influence from living here in New York and also from my time in Miami. Also being exposed to all the great produce that I can find here and also all that touch and all that confluence of different cultures that happen here in the city, that has been great. Also traveling within the United States and getting to learn that it's not always pizza and burgers what and taste this food culture. That has been very influential and has enriched a lot. My food and the way that I cook. One of my initial food memories is always goes back to my grandma's kitchen. Mm. My family itself is not, I don't come from a big family. I'm the only child. But I have a lot of cousins and we all had that Sunday supper family gathering where everybody goes and grandma cooked a big meal for everybody. So those are like the things that from very little inspire me, that like that sharing and that gathering around food, and like basically every family event was around food.
I feel like grandmothers feature really prominently on this show. We all have like a grandmother food story. What were some of the things you remember eating at the table, like with all of your family, or your cousins and your extended family?
One of the things that I was a really picky eater, and like sometimes she made special things for me because I wouldn't eat whatever like she had cooked.
Lucky.
For very spoiled, yes, from the beginning. But what I remember the most is cachapas. That's they can be made different ways. It's basically a sweet corn batter that can be made steam wrapped like a tamal. Or it could be also be like a corn pancake made on a griddle. So what she used to make especially for me was the steam ones. And they are not hard to make, but they take some, a little bit, like they are kind of industrious in the way that the batter is kind of like liquid, and you have to wrap that. It's not like the tamale that like it's kind of like it has a consistency that you can wrap, but it's more liquid, so you have to be careful that it doesn't spill out of the corn leaves, the wrapper. So yeah, I really appreciate that she took the time and she made like a big batch for me so I could take home. Wow. And basically eat that every day.
Wow. That's a pretty sweet grandmother.
Yeah.
And I remember you saying before that, yeah, you were kind of like a meat and potatoes kind of diet. Like you weren't really curious about food as much and a little hesitant until you met your husband, mm-hmm. and his influence really like kind of pushed you. And so what were some of those things? I remember you saying there were a lot of like some food trucks and like, some different things that you got exposed to that really got you like excited about food.
Well, it all started, back in Venezuela. We used to go out and eat a lot.
You were in Caracas?
Yeah, okay. We were in Caracas. We went to college together, actually to high school together. It's a
oh, right. Yeah. You're
story.
Like way back sweethearts.
And during college, we had like lunch breaks and we would go and every day try something different. At that time, like we weren't that adventurous. Like, I guess like Caracas also wasn't like a super huge city with many different things.
And
to
you
try.
Were on like a high school budget.
Exactly. but I remember one of the first things that we had together was sushi, and I thought it was a horrible experience. Like just the idea of eating something that was raw and wrapped in rice, that I couldn't wrap my head around that idea. But we just took a trip to Japan. Now I think like being exposed to
come to, like full circle
and did the full circle. And now I love it. Like, I think everything is an acquired taste and you just have to try things.
And did that kind of like when you moved together to Miami, which is where mm-hmm. you lived before coming to New York City, what was some of the, like, what was kind of the food culture there that you kind of got immersed in? So I remember you saying you worked on a food truck and
yes.
you kind of really got both exposure eating the food, which you had been doing, and being a little more adventurous there. But then you actually got to start cooking.
Yes. Well, my whole thing with food and like in kitchens started with Chef Jeremiah. He had a food truck called the Gastropub, the Gastropod. It was really fun. One night at one of his events, I offered myself to help, and he was happy to have help in the kitchen. So that was mostly like American food, and that. I mean, that whole rush in the kitchen, and that was really inspiring, and that adrenaline shot of like being in the kitchen and a busy kitchen with a line of people that we had to serve was fun. But yeah, Chef Jeremiah was one of my first like senseis in the kitchen. and it was great. From like that experience was amazing.
And then when you moved to New York, how long did it take for you to start kind of flexing those muscles and wanting to do events yourself and wanting to create food that, you know, was reflective of the cuisine you grew up eating in Venezuela, but also like a little different?
Well, it took me about 2 years. I joined a CSA, the Greenpoint Williamsburg CSA.
Oh, yeah. I was a member of that CSA for a while.
I love that CSA.
You get so many vegetables, yes. Like so many. They don't tell you. They don't prepare you.
But it's great. So yeah, it's a lot of work. You have to cook a lot. So that was what got me into, well, this is the food that I like, but this is the ingredients that I have. So how do I combine all of these to keep making the food that I eat? So I started making these mixes and experiments in the kitchen. And at the end, I was asking myself all the time, like, well, is this really Venezuelan food? Like, what is this thing we're eating? And well, it's a manifestation of things colliding. It's what I said earlier, like what you have within, what you brought with you, and what you have around you, and how everything comes together and how you can create something different. So that was the idea behind the pop-up, and that's how like I started creating all these recipes and all these pictures, and my Instagram was like popping a little bit everywhere. And people were asking to try the food, that where was the restaurant, and they still ask, where is the restaurant? And I don't really have a restaurant. It's just a pop-up that happens every 3 months. Where I try to showcase the food that is seasonal. And I came across these amazing grains from the Union Square Grains Project that I could actually, it's corn that it's grown here in upstate New York that I cooked and I turned into arepas, and I started making everything from scratch. Our tamales called hallacas that we make for the holidays. So I started making that whole experimentation with all those classic recipes that now don't really, like, I don't know where should I categorize that? Like, is that Venezuelan? It's Venezuelan-American. Who knows? But it's... people like it. I like it. So it's been my way to share that combination.
Yeah, and it kind of really speaks to this kind of archaic and just totally false notion of authenticity. Like, you're Venezuelan American, and whatever you make, therefore, is going to be that. Like, if you're putting that intention into it, and you're using what you have, and so it's. It's like very creative and kind of the most, I think, iconic representation of what it means to be an immigrant in this country. Like, you're taking what you know, mm-hmm. and using what you have and making something really beautiful with it that's, you know, like meaningful for you. And obviously, like, people around are pretty excited about it too.
Exactly. So I get also very excited that it has such an amazing, reviews and all the feedback that I have been getting. So it's been really fun to see, like, this is a project that is also attracting people that think alike, and that it's been connecting me also with food growers and people in the food industry that otherwise I wouldn't have been in touch with.
Right. So, like, who are some of the people you work with when you're planning one of these big dinners? Because it's usually what, like 40 seats?
Yes.
Okay. So who are some of maybe the farms or the growers that you work with in order to try to keep it as hyper local as possible?
Right. Well, I go a lot to the Union Square market. I source my grains from the grain stand. And like, seriously, I just go to the market and pick what I feel that it's the freshest and the most beautiful stuff that I can find. of course, I have like recipes in mind, but it always comes to what I see at the moment.
So it's kind of like improvised.
Yes.
Okay.
A little bit. Mm-hmm.
And then I forget if we talked about this, like if you have an art background or not, because you, like, your plating is really beautiful. Like, if you go on her Instagram, which is I Am Bananista, right? You would see this, like, it's very colorful, edible flowers. Oh, and we have to talk about the arepas and the colors that you've made. Anyway, it's just, I had never asked that before. Was that like...
No, I don't, but I have always gravitated to graphic design, and I have always worked at... My background is in advertising,
right.
And I work as a project manager for advertising and brand. So I have always been around graphic designers and artists, so that has always, like, and I work with them to, like, try to make the best work that mm-hmm. we can, so... I have been developing an eye for photography and I have always also had a manual skill, and I have always liked doing crafts and all that sort of stuff. For me, it's relaxing just to plate for hours.
Yeah.
And also to cook for hours. And yeah.
Well, it shows. So so you've kind of... I think are unique in that you have done some things with arepas that I don't know how many people have also done, but I'm going to say maybe not so many. So do you want to talk a little bit about kind of your experimentation with the food? And then also maybe some of the feedback, like on social media, like people who are Venezuelan and not Venezuelan, kind mm-hmm. of like engaging with what you've done with the cuisine.
Well, with the colors, it all started with the... I think the inspiration was all the rainbow food that it's around, and the rainbow bagel. One day I went to the bagel shop and I bought one, and I'm like, well, this is a bread, and like I can do this also with my bread that is the arepa. For a long time, I always tried to make everything as natural as possible. So for a long time, I struggled to create the color blue. So I was like, what is that food that it's not sweet, that it's not, that it's natural,
like
that
a
it's
neutral,
not,
yeah.
That also doesn't have like a very strong flavor that I can mix with the white masa and create this color. And I couldn't find anything, and it's a primary color, so it's really hard to get it. So one day I think it was on Instagram that I saw a smoothie made with pea flour. If you sip the pea flour on water, it creates a very bright blue tea. So I'm like, this is it. I'm going to make the blue tea, and the blue tea is going to become the blue arepas. So I did it different ways. There's different way to do it. You can do it with vegetable juices, or you can just go straight and use the vegetable powders, like there's spirulina, beet powder, dragon fruit that it's pink and it gives you like a very bright hot pink color, turmeric. So I'm like, okay, let me pick all the like the seven colors of the rainbow and make all the shades and make all the arepas. And with the blue one, it's like I cracked the code. And so the feedback has been like, it's sometimes it's a little bit extreme. Like some people think it's great and colorful and amazing. Other people like everything, haters are going to hate. And they say that
the trolls are going to come.
Yeah. That it's gross and blah, blah, blah. But like literally like the powders don't give any flavor to the masa. So it's only a visual thing. And it's been fun to teach children, because for them it's Play-Doh.
Right.
And it's just such a fun thing to do. And if the powders are giving any nutrition content to the arepa, that's great as well.
Yeah, it's not like the artificial like coloring that is probably in those bagels. Just going to call that. And like the marbling, if you look on her Instagram, you'll see like some of them are marbled, and it's just, yeah, it's really beautiful and colorful. And it's like, and I think it's a nice kind of counter to like the super trendy unicorn everything, because you do a lot of education in your post about your process, like what you're doing, what you're using, what your ingredients are, this like, you know, local kind of heirloom corn that you're using. And so it's, you know, it's both, you know, aesthetically really beautiful, but it also has depth. It's not this like shallow industrialized product just to get likes and just to get people to like freak out about it. Like it's really, it's beautiful, but has a lot of substance as well.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, I think the other thing that inspired that, now that I'm tracking back in my mind, is that I tried to, I love leftovers. Anytime that I can work with leftovers and turn that into something different and new and just have another meal around it. Anytime I have like soup or like any vegetable juice, whatever it's in there, I just mix it with the masa. And that gives flavor and also nutritious content to the arepa. So it's like a win-win.
Yeah, yeah. And then you also, I want to talk a little bit about your cooking classes. So not only, you know, do you do these events where you're cooking and you're having this very nice like sit down meal, but yeah, you also are teaching classes so people can do this themselves in their homes. What are some of those classes that you've taught?
Well, I don't have any classes scheduled at the moment, but I have been doing them at the Brooklyn Kitchen and also at the Dynamite Shop. For the Dynamite Shop, it has been for children. It's been really fun.
Now, where is that?
This is in Brooklyn.
Okay.
The whole concept around the place is that it's an after-school program, so they have different kinds of cooking programs for children and teenagers. The first time that I did it, I was really scared. I think it was a different thing than doing it with adults. I was like, oh my God, all these children, they're going to be like super honest with everything. So I need to get ready for that. But they were super sweet and super open to everything. And it was really fun. I can't wait to do it again.
And what age group?
They were like between 7 and 12.
Okay, yeah. And yeah, they're still kind of like open and
It was
not
so,
too much ego.
It was great because like all of them were already like interested in food. Some of them have blogs and...
Oh, wow.
It was so sweet.
And did you do the arepas or did you make something else?
We made the arepas with some of the colors.
Okay.
Yeah. And we got to like do the marbling and and all that.
Wow.
And actually it was at the Dynamite Shop where we did the third dinner. It was kind of a location change for that. Also to like try another kitchen in a different neighborhood and... It was nice.
Yeah, no, it's good. We are going to take a quick break, and then we will be right back.
A fond farewell. Not overdue, but just as well.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, the first to pioneer colorful enameled cookware over 90 years ago. They've been a favorite for generations through the meals and memories the cookware creates and the style it expresses. My name is Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director at Heritage Radio Network. When I'm not making food radio, I'm making food, and my favorite cookware is the 8-quart marine blue Dutch oven that never leaves my stovetop. Before we got our Le Creuset, the cookware we used most often was an antique Griswold cast iron pan. It didn't take long for me to realize how much I'd been missing enamel cast iron in my life. Le Creuset has the superior heat retention of cast iron, but paired with the unparalleled performance and ease of enamel. That means delicious food with easy cleanup. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN, that's LECREUSET, HRN to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
Welcome back to Food Without Borders on Heritage Radio Network. I am your host tonight, Leah Kurtz, and we are welcoming back. We're having our little conversation with Mercedes Golip. It's not a little conversation. It's a great conversation. I don't know what I'm talking about. But we've just been discussing some of her work doing pop-up dinners and also teaching culinary classes focused on food that is Venezuelan inspired but produced with local ingredients. And so I'm very curious how voting went yesterday. This is your second year, you said, voting?
Yes, I voted yesterday. In this little bubble that we lived in New York, things went well, I think. But there's so much still we need to do.
So much, yeah. It's been inspiring to see all of the, women of color, queer folks, like indigenous people, like, you know, winning. And it's also been, like, shocking that this is the first mm-hmm. time, like, a Native American woman yeah. has been, you know. So, yeah, it's kind of, it's always a little bit startling, but at least some good things have come. And then how has that been for you the past 2 years, voting and going through that process? How does that feel like as a fairly recent immigrant?
Well, coming from Venezuela, I don't believe in not voting. I think that every time that you have the chance to exercise your rights, you have to do it. It's a civil duty that you have to take seriously. We kind of lost that option in Venezuela. You still can vote, but all those elections are completely rigged. So do it when you can and use it as a tool to change. It's very important to do it, and it's an obligation.
When you can do it, it's certainly not easy for everyone. And we even saw that in Brooklyn, you know, like these long lines mm-hmm. and people running out of ballots and one machine working. It was just kind of pathetic. It's almost like they don't want you to vote. it's almost like there's a system set against us. but yeah, it's like hard. And I think it is kind of always refreshing to hear from a perspective from someone coming from another place where, like, you've also, you know, had and are currently experiencing a lot of political turmoil as a reminder of, like, you know, we do take a lot for granted here. Mm-hmm. And it's important that for those of us who can exercise that right to do it and not just that one day, but I think, and this is what's most inspiring, is like the more of the common mainstream push to be involved in local politics and mm-hmm. grassroots activism as a part of our lives, not this one thing we do once a year, which I think even a lot of your work around food, it's still kind of drawing those connections.
Yeah, I mean, I think also, like, when you think about, like, how to get involved in politics, sometimes it's not always the way you think, like, in, like, getting involved in laws and all that, but it also can be, like, you can find something that you like, and how you see it's been working, like, how the laws are around that thing that you like, and see how you can get involved in this case. I think that the most you know about your food and the most you know about where everything comes from, it's also a way to participate. Supporting your local producers and getting to know them and getting to know the struggle and how that food gets to your plate, it's important, and it's a way to participate.
Yeah, and also to, you know, kind of divert those funds that maybe you would be spending just like in a you know, grocery store buying super industrialized food that you have no idea where it came from and no idea who picked it and how much they were paid. And, you know, at least as you can, buying from like the, you know, familiar faces at like the farmer's market or wherever. And not to say that there aren't like major labor issues in even the local agricultural system here, but at least, yeah, it's more traceable.
Mm-hmm. And if you can join a CSA, that's also a way to create community. You meet a lot of people that, I mean, and you become friends with a lot of people that otherwise you wouldn't even meet in a city where like you can get isolated.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, if anything, you can just like commiserate over what you're going to do with all the kohlrabi that you just got. I remember.
And kudos to my CSA. I'm no longer with them because I moved away from that area and it's hard for me to pick the vegetables now, but they were my starting point to do these demos in a public environment because I was posting recipes and sharing on their Instagram, and one day they asked me to do it for the kickoff of the season, and I was glad to do it, and I think that's how everything started.
Wow, so you never know how your life can change when you join the CSA. So speaking of some of your events, I know you have an event coming up this weekend.
Yeah, this Saturday, I'm going to join Rachelle Robinette. She runs the Supernatural Cafe, and we're going to be at the Neighborhood Studio. She has a Refresh workshop, so we'll be cooking a meal that you can actually have in your fridge and like repurpose for the whole week, so you don't have to cook every day and you still have something plant-based and healthy to have to get you through the week. So I'm going to be making it's a quick bread made with cassava flour. Mm-hmm. And we're going to top it with a local ceviche made with local ingredients as well. And also the next weekend, Saturday, 17th, I'm going to be at the Union Square Green Market. I'm going to be doing a demo this whole month of November. They're going to be showcasing different chefs and immigrant chefs and how they add to the Thanksgiving tradition to the table.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's going to be fun if you can pop there for the whole.
What time are you going to be there?
It's going to be from 10 to, it usually goes from 10 to 1 or 2 p.m.
And what are you going to be cooking?
I don't know yet.
Oh, okay. You've got to go see what the ingredients are.
Yes.
So I like that you brought up the ceviche. So you have a vegan ceviche recipe. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, for that ceviche, I use shiitake mushrooms instead of fish. They kind of get that spongy texture and they absorb all the flavors of everything that you have around. It's like a salsa, but then you have the mushroom to give you that consistency and that meaty sensation.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing about that recipe, and I have been making that for 2 years now, it's that you can, as the season progresses, you can basically add any vegetable that you have available. The only thing that you need is a little bit of heat and some acidity, like lemon juice, or you can use vinegar as well. But basically at this point of the year, you can be using sweet potatoes and squash, all that. It's good.
Wow, an all-season ceviche.
Yeah.
I love it. And you got into experimenting with plant-based foods because you were vegan for a little while, correct?
Yes. For health issues, I decided to just go as clean as I could, and going vegan was the option. The Hispanic cuisine is not the friendliest vegan cuisine, but you can start making substitutions, and there's a point where you can like get it flowing. it's like now I have a lot of recipes that I can share and you can post if you want.
Oh, yeah.
For how to make empanadas and how to make a picadillo. Picadillo is traditionally made with meat. I have a recipe that it's also with mushrooms. So yeah, it was a little bit of experimentation and trying to like still get that hearty and like filling and satisfying food, but in a healthier or like a non-meat way.
Right, and it's great that like you're also, I mean, first of all, mushrooms are so under like utilized, I feel like, especially now with all this like the plant-based meats and all the burgers, which it's like fine. Those are, I mean, those have their place, but I really like that. Yeah, you're kind of educating around like these are all ingredients that we could just go find anywhere, yeah. And that it's like respecting the seasonality mm-hmm. of access to them.
And if it's not mushrooms, like you can play with corn, or it's just a matter of like taking that consistency and see what else you can substitute with.
Yeah, and really getting down to the kind of the bones, no pun intended, of like what those flavors are. Like when
exactly.
you think of like what is ceviche, like what are those actual flavors that you're craving? What are the seasonings and the spices and the texture, not just exactly what it's made from? And I think that's really cool about your cooking, is like your approach is just super open-minded and also really like, yeah, improvised just based on kind of what mm-hmm. you have. That, yeah, I think that's where like creativity and even sometimes in like when your resources are limited, like your creativity then flows sometimes
yeah.
even more, because you kind of like you have to think outside the box.
Yeah. And now I'm writing the recipes, but at the beginning it was kind of like hard to do it just because of that, because I tend to improvise a lot. So now when I'm writing them, my advice is like, you don't have to go by the letter here. You can just play around with what you think could be a good substitute for these.
Yeah, I think like, yeah, learning like, and this is something that's great that you are infusing in your recipes, is teaching people to just trust themselves, mm-hmm. like trust your sense of taste. Try the food while you're cooking it.
Like, yes, this is very important. Food without seasoning, it's not good.
No, it's not. Nope. As a white person from the Midwest, I know this. I know this very well.
I think that's the first when we're cooking, when we're making the arepas at the class, I encourage people to, it's the dough is pre-cooked, so there's no reason you're not gonna get sick by trying it. There's nothing worse than bread without salt, and oh. that's a bread. So that's the pocket where you're gonna add other stuff, so make that flavorful.
I'm excited because I already had plans to eat arepas this weekend, even before I remembered that we were chatting. And so I knew this conversation was going to like get me like really craving them so hard. So I'm glad that I already have that in place.
And just another idea for your arepas this weekend. If you want to substitute the water for something else, it could be plant-based milk or a broth or a vegetable soup. I encourage you to do that.
Yeah, because, yeah, that, like, totally, I'm sure, like, takes it up a notch.
Yeah.
Like, and also uses leftovers if you have them. I
exactly.
definitely do. Now is the soup season, so we've all probably got some soup hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we will share some of those recipes for sure, because I think it's great if people can, like, not only hear, you know, kind of your approach and hear what you do, but then also be able to try it themselves. We'll be sharing the links for those events as well. So if you have some time this weekend and next weekend to stop by and check out Mercedes, either at her cooking class or the demo at the Union Square Green Market, you will not regret it. It's a good time, and she is, as you can tell, lovely to chat with.
Thank you so much for
being here. And you can follow her at I Am Bananista on Instagram, and then Mercedes Golip on Facebook. You're not on Twitter,
no,
right?
I'm not.
Okay. Yeah, it's fine. It's a dark place.
Too many social medias. keep up with.
Well, thank you again for coming on the show. It's been wonderful to have you, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.